Hey, well, Merry Christmas. Welcome to Eastlake. We call this a church for everyone, and we're starting our Christmas series this weekend. Our topic is going to be prayer, and sometimes when I pray, it feels like a Christmas wish list. During this season that is so special, it's the time that we get a chance to know that, or be reminded, God loves us so much. He's with us. He wanted to be with us, and yet there are those times that it seems like he's just like Santa. He's way up at the North Pole. How do I get a hold of him? The best I can do is, you know, jot him a letter and hope for the best. Here's a question. How do you handle your unanswered prayers? We're starting the Christmas season with this idea of praying. And sometimes when our prayers go unanswered, it seems like God is far away. And especially if it's, you know, if it's just a wish list. Because then I just write the things down that I want from God, and I start to view him on the basis of how he handles my wish list. I can see myself, whether I'm naughty or nice. If everything boils down to, well, God, what did you do about my wish list? Then I see God a certain way. We're going to look at it differently as we start our Christmas season. It's the big idea. Prayer is a conversation, not a wish list. That to have a conversation with God is what prayer is all about. When Jesus would pray, it would catch people's eye and it would startle them. It would cause them to look twice, because when Jesus prayed, it seemed like someone was listening on the other side. When he would say a prayer, he would pray in a way that he felt like someone was listening to his prayers. He had friends that were with him, and they would jot down different things about his life. They ended up writing it in the Bible. Someone saw him praying one time, and they jotted it down. I'll read it to you. It's in your notes. One day, Jesus was praying at a certain place. When he finished, one of his disciples said to him, "Lord, teach us to pray." So they're watching Jesus pray, and they're like, man, he looks like he's talking to someone. And someone's listening. There's a conversation going on. Could you teach us to be and pray like that? So he gives them this model on what that's like. And I'll read it to you. It's in your notes. This is the model and what we're going to talk about today. Here's the model. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread, and forgive us of our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. So we're going to kind of break it down into two sections. Number one, write your notes. God helps me see what I can't see without him. So he's talking about a perspective here, and he starts this idea of saying it's our Father. And notice he doesn't say my Father. He says our Father. The hint is that we're all a part of one big family. We're interconnected with each other, and we share the same dad. That we all have the same Father. And so that means sometimes when I say my prayers, my Father has to deal with that, because he's also your Father. If you ever wondered why some of your prayers don't get answered, I was watching a football game last weekend, the NFL guys, and when it's over, they all get together and they're praying, and I was watching it. I thought, you know, these are people that are following Christ. The game's over. Both sides send players out. You know, they want to get together and pray. They're in the middle of the field praying. And I was watching, I thought, that's odd, because, you know, both teams can't win. I mean, there had to be a loser in this game. So can you imagine before the game, all the players are praying, God, I want to win the game, I want to win the game, and the dilemma that God must have. Well, who do I help? They're all my kids. Maybe they come to the conclusion it is they maybe I can play the NFL game with God, for God, but I'm not sure what he'll decide about my prayers. Jesus turns our perspective and he says, before we even start this whole conversation, you need to understand that you're part of a family. And we all share the same Father. And that would have been a really unique term for them in this day, and it is for us too. In the 2,000 years before Jesus lived, it wasn't that they never referred to God as Father, but if you look at all the church history before Jesus, There was only 30 times that it's recorded that they referred to God as a father. Jesus shows up, and in his short life, he calls God Father 165 times. It was his very favorite term, was to call him Father. What it means is that he's in charge of a family, that he has authority, that he cares about a family. Really, maybe what the Lord is saying is that how I see God is going to determine on how I talk to God. The kind of conversation I feel like I can have. You can have a conversation with a father. I don't know how you see God. Maybe you see God, or you know people that see God as a judge. And so if I see God like a judge, I'll sort of lean towards legalism because I always come before the judge. It's like I live my life in a courtroom. And I'm always presenting my case. And God's role is to decide what's right or wrong and then to give out a reward or a consequence. So if I see God like a judge, I'm always on trial. I'm always sort of presenting my life to God and waiting to see what he decides. That would create a certain type of conversation. Some people see God like a clockmaker. I mean, at some point they look around in this world and the universe and they go, there's just, with the layers of relationship and everything that's happened here, there's just no possible way that this just happened. So somebody had to have made this. It's like you pull the face off a clock and you see the gears and the levers and all the components inside there, old school clock now, not digital. And you look inside there and you see that and you're like, somebody had to have made this clock. But then the idea is that the clockmaker just stepped away and then just decides whatever happens, happens. I made it, now it's up to you. So if you see God as a clockmaker that's uninvolved and indifferent, I made it, now it's your life to decide what you want to do, that creates a certain type of conversation. Jesus calls God Father. He's someone that has a family he cares about. And there's a lot of different people in the family with a lot of different needs and a lot of different stories going on. And he's the father of that family. When they heard him pray, it sounded like someone talking to their dad that understood that he was a part of a family with a lot of other kids that had the same dad as he had. A father that cares about the family. This is one of my favorite parts of the Bible. It's not in your notes. It's not even going to come up on screen, but it's one of my favorite spots where Jesus is talking about the Father, and this is what he says. He says, look at the birds. They do not plant seeds, gather harvest, or put it in barns. Yet your Father in heaven takes care of them. Aren't you worth much more than birds? What's the price of two sparrows, one copper coin? But not a single sparrow can fall to the ground without your Father knowing it. So right off the bat, Jesus said the way to see God. When you see God as a Father, he can help you see differently. Because there's things I can't see without him. The perspective of a father. Jesus, our Father in heaven, which really what that means is that, you know, God has this greater perspective. I mean, you know, he's in heaven sort of watching the whole thing. He has a big picture view of what's happening in my life. And God's in heaven and I'm not. He can see the whole picture of what's going on. He has the big, big picture of what's happening. He has a different perspective. And you know now if you have children or maybe you're an aunt or an uncle or you're the adult and there's kids, you know that your perspective is so much greater than your children's perspective. Or maybe you babysit and from, you know, you have kindergartners or even grade school or elementary, junior high, and you marvel at the perspective that they have compared to yours because you have a much larger perspective than they have. This is a little way of saying it. Check this out. This is a high school girl. It says, one night a teenage girl brought her new boyfriend home to meet her parents, and they were appalled by his appearance. Leather jacket, motorcycle boots, tattoos, and a pierced nose. Later, the parents pulled their daughter aside and confessed their concerns. Dear, said the mother, he doesn't seem very nice. "Oh, Mom," replied the daughter, "if he wasn't so nice, why would he be doing 5,000 hours of community service?" She's going to need someone help her with her perspective. And so do we. Our Father in heaven, he sees things from the perspective of heaven. And it's a larger perspective than ours. It's a greater perspective than ours. He can see things and show me things that I can never see from my place. But he can see them. And it says, "Hallowed be thy name." Nobody says hallowed anymore. I mean, you never hear anybody say that. The word means holy. You don't even hear anybody say holy anymore very often. You know, unless you're hanging out watching a football game and, you know, somebody says, "Holy crap, did you see that catch?" Or like me during the Utes game, "Holy crap, did you see that no call?" Just saying. But I mean, historically, the word holy has always been the word we use to describe the undescribable. Hallowed be thy name. 30 times in 2,000 years, the church had described God as a father. So Jesus knows it's not going to be easy for people to catch it. It's going to be difficult to describe God as a father and for people to be willing or even understand or embrace it. And part of the reason is because when you say father or dad, I bring all my dad issues with me. I bring all my issues with my father, or a friend of mine's father, or somebody in my neighborhood's father, or some authority figure in my life. You say father, and I bring all those with me to the table, and it's difficult to distinguish it, which is one of the reasons it's so important to forgive your dad. You know, being a dad's not an easy job. When you're a kid growing up, it's easy to look at the dads and, you know, what they should do and shouldn't do, and a lot of that's true. But when you are the dad, you look back and there's so many different things you wish you would have done different, you would have seen differently, and it's not an easy job. It's not easy to be an uncle or an aunt. It's not easy to be an authority figure in a child's life or someone's life. That's not easy. And one of the reasons it's so important to forgive my dad or forgive our fathers is because if I don't, I mix it in with God and him being my father. It's difficult. I mix it all in there. And when Jesus said, "Our Father in heaven," and then all my dad stuff comes up. All my dad issues come up. Do you need to forgive your dad of anything this Christmas? And just for a moment, what's most important is that if you could forgive your dad, then you could see God the Father as just God the Father. Not painted by or defined by whoever your father was. Is there an authority figure in your life, some man in your life? It could even be right now. And the way that person's treating you, the way you view that male authority figure, it's tainting how you see God. Could you forgive them? Even if they don't deserve it. Because when you're able to forgive them, if you choose to forgive them, what happens is you can see God just as your Father, uninhibited, uncolored, undefined by anything other than himself. Hallowed be thy name. He's really emphasizing it, is what he's doing. He's saying, you can have a conversation with your Father. You can talk with him, and he can help you see things from his perspective that you could never see on your own. And in everyday life, our relationships, just one day out of our lives, to be able to see things from his perspective is powerful. Check this video out. It's a great way to show it. Check this out.
Kid, every time I'm pulling out, he's right there. Man, and someone needs to talk to his parents if they're ever at home. What is up with the traffic today? And always, every day, this intersection's always crowded. I hate pulling out of here. Maybe some of these dumb roads. Oh, there's. Oh. Okay, so I'm not even here. Right. Great lady. The princess of parking. Oh, sure. Take the spot. Way to be considerate. Oh, are you kidding me? Unbelievable. Oh.
Thank you, ma'am. Have a great day.
It's about time. Let's see. What do I want?
Could I add a cookie to that order?
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, no problem, only guy in the world. I'm sure you need your cookie. The world? Your oyster, and he's serving your cookies.
Thanks,
thank
sir.
You so much.
Uh-huh. What can I get for you?
I'll have a tall decaf macchiato.
Yeah, sure, no problem. $3.85. And it might take a few minutes here. We've got quite a line, obviously, and thanks for your patience.
Great.
Yeah, great. Great for me. Waiting again. Unbelievable. What? What is... What is that? What in the world? What am I supposed to do? How can I do anything about that? Can I even help with that? I don't...
Your copy, sir. Oh.
I can't take this anymore. I gotta get out of here.
Hey, what?
Hey, buddy, come here.
Here's the thing. Your life, my life, looks so much different from his perspective. And we really need to be able to see things from his perspective to see what's really going on. He's our Father, all of us, and he has a perspective to show us that's completely different than we can see, and it changes everything. That's why we call his name holy. He sees it so differently, and when he shows us that, what might be going on in your life right now? And you're afraid or you're angry, or you're stuck. And prayer is the conversation that we have, because it's within the conversation that He helps us see something that we can't see ourselves. It changes everything. Now, the second thing, right in your notes, He helps me to do what I can't do without Him. This part of the prayer that He prays, saying, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Your kingdom, you can just jot your notes somewhere. Kingdom just means a way of life. And what I have discovered in my life is there's two rival kingdoms at all times. There's God's kingdom and there's mine. And it's in the conversation that they can get on the same page, because there are certain things that I can't do in my kingdom, and it's only possible for it to be done if I operate out of His. That's what it means to say, your kingdom come. God, get me on the same page as you, because I can't do certain things. There may be someone in your life that you're unable to forgive. They don't deserve it. They haven't asked it. Isn't it maddening when someone's hurt you or wronged you and they won't admit it? Or worse, they don't even know they've done it. You're like, how am I supposed to forgive them? They can't even see that they've done it. They won't even admit that they did anything wrong. In my kingdom, some people are not forgiven. But in God's kingdom, they are. And I'm so glad, because it was out of His kingdom that He forgave me. So this idea of your kingdom come means, God, get us on the same page. And give us our daily bread. I understand that. You think of it like, well, I have the weight of the world on my shoulders. How am I going to provide for my family? How am I going to make for a great Christmas? Maybe there's something coming at you in your life and you're wondering if you're prepared, or are you going to be able to handle it? What they heard Him pray was that, God, I know because you're my Father and you have a perspective from heaven and you run your kingdom a certain way, that there'll always be enough for me. Always be enough courage, always be enough mercy, there'll always be enough money, there'll always be enough time, whatever's coming towards me. Years and years ago, when I first started out in the ministry, became a pastor, one of my first jobs was to lead the singing. And so they had the worship time. And so I would be the guy up here, you know, leading the singing. And the problem was they picked someone that didn't sing very well. I didn't have a very good voice. And so I don't know how I got that job. But anyways, I'm leading the singing, and it was getting more and more noticeable to people that I didn't sing very well. I was off tune. And, you know, it's not great when you're singing up here and other people are laughing and pointing, and, you know, it's not good. And so I decided that I would take a vocal class. I thought, well, I'm going to do anything I can to improve my voice. So I enrolled in a voice class, so you could become a better singer at the local community college. And I get there the very first day, a friend had recommended it to me and said, this is the one you want to take. This is a really great teacher. And when we get to the very first day of the class, you know, we're all packed in this small classroom, and this teacher comes in, and you can tell right off the bat she's completely passionate. She's not very tall, but she just takes charge of this classroom. She said, and today we're going to find out how everybody sings. I want to hear your voices right off the bat. So everybody's going to stand up individually and sing Happy Birthday in front of the whole class. And you're just like, I can't believe this. This is so ridiculous, you know. And sure enough, we had to do it. She made us stand up, right, you know, my name is Robin, sing Happy Birthday. And then she announces also that there's going to be a recital. And this recital was going to determine your grade in this class. So for the whole semester, you know, we're practicing our vocal lessons, and the recital, she says, is just going to be like you're singing in front of a, you know, professional singing in front of an audience. You have to come dressed up in a formal suit, and she shows you how to walk onto the stage and, you know, announce your name and the song that you're going to be singing. You know, this whole recital's coming, and she gives us the date of the recital, And she starts to pass out the songs that we're going to sing. And they're the cheesiest songs, like someone over here got Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. They have to sing it through. Someone else got Humpty Dumpty. I got On Top of Old Smokey. I'm like, what? You know, and she, this girl is not to be messed with, this woman. I mean, she has got this class. This is a professional situation. You're gonna, so I've got to wear a suit and tie. I've got to come to this performance and, you know, do this special walk. It's like the craziest thing ever. And it's like, I'll show you what it's like. I mean, I have to stand off to the side, and everybody's in the class, right? And you got to pretend like, oh, I'm at Carnegie Hall. This is a big deal. And you have to walk out, you know, in a perfect stance like this and make your turn. And then you come before them and you look out at the audience with your head held. And you say, my name is Robin Gaddis. I'll be singing On Top of Old Smokey. It's ridiculous. It's embarrassing. I mean, I'm a grown man. You don't do something like that. But here was the amazing thing through it. You know that feeling you have as you're looking forward to Christmas? I had exactly the opposite of that one when it was time for me to do my recital. Is there anything coming at you that you're wondering if you're going to be enough for? The best part about that class and that recital is I knew that it was too much for me. I knew I didn't want to do it, but I knew I needed to do it. And God and I did it together. Your daily bread comes from your Father. Jesus is saying as he prays to God, I know you'll be there for me. I know you'll have my back. Every day, no matter what's coming at me, every day, you'll be there for me. Now, it's interesting in the same sort of a phraseology, he says, forgive us of our debts. You'd think he would say, forgive us of our sins. But he says, forgive us of our debts, which broadens it out a little bit. Because debts means anything in my life that I've been unwilling to pay the price for. So for everybody that started your diet and you were going to work out and you've already blown it, you were unwilling to pay the price, like me, and you feel guilty about it. There's some shame there. You're like, oh, I didn't get up. I didn't do what I said I was going to. For anybody that was dishonest this week because you didn't want to pay the price of the consequences of honesty. Anybody that promised yourself, I'm not going to yell at the kids anymore. I'm just not going to. And then you found yourself screaming again. You weren't willing to pay the price to get up and walk out and take a time out like you said you would. It's a debt. It's like I said I was going to do that. I promised myself this time I would. And I didn't come through. And now I feel like I didn't pay the price. Or maybe you're going to see someone at Christmas this month and they didn't pay the price when it came to you and now you feel like they owe you something. They have a debt with you. Here's what Jesus is saying. I can cover all debts. I can pay the price for all of it. Can you imagine if you were to walk up to a college campus today, and you gathered like 30 students together and you said, hey, it doesn't matter what your school bill is, it doesn't matter how many loans you have, it doesn't matter how much money you owe for your classes, I've just decided I forgive all your debts today that you owe the school. Can you imagine how hard they would get laughed at when they went to pay, you know, the next class? Oh, don't worry about it. Some guy on campus today told me all my debts are forgiven. I don't owe you guys anything. We can't do that. We can't pay off another person's debt. But Jesus says God can. Whatever debt is owed you, whatever debt you owe, in this prayer conversation is where it gets paid in full. Whatever you carried in today, whatever you weren't willing to pay the price for, the debt is paid in full. Now, this last part of it, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. It basically just says this. God's saying there's an inside world and an outside world. On the inside, there's temptations, and on the outside, there's plenty of evil. And it's in the conversation that I deal with both. Prayer is not a wish list. It's a conversation that we have with our Father that has a very unique perspective, that it's so large he can see everyone's need in the whole family. And that his name is holy because he can. And that our daily bread will be there every day. And as we struggle with what's on the inside and on the outside, it's within the conversation. See, if I just approach God like a wish list, then I'm just going to see him based on the different things that I've told him that I want. But if I can see prayer as a conversation, he'll help me see things that I can't see without him. He'll help me do things that I can't do without him. That's Christmas. Now look in the bottom line today. God wants to help us. So here's Jesus talking right now. It says, and so it is with prayer. Keep on asking and you'll keep on getting. Keep on looking and you will keep on finding. Knock and the door will be opened. Everyone who asks receives. All who seek find. And the door is open to everyone who knocks.